You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Today, I have a guest that I have known since I came into recovery in 1981. He was instrumental in helping me get sober and me get sane, although that would be questionable by some of my friends, the sanity part. But he was in the doors of the 12-step programs reaching out to me and a lot of other young people that were trying to get sober in the early 80s. His name is Chuck. He was raised in Evansville, Indiana, is a graduate of North High School, and has been very active in the program of recovery and handing lots of hope and information to people, especially in his community and just in the whole community about how to get access to recovery and sobriety. So I'm going to introduce you to Chuck, let him tell you his story a little bit, and then we'll get in a discussion with him and ask him questions. Feel free to call. The number to call for Radio Rehab is, well, I don't know it by heart yet, it is 424-1400. You can call and ask Chuck anything. You can call and ask me anything. Nothing's below the belt. We'd love to hear from you. So I'm going to turn it over to Chuck. Thanks for coming, Chuck.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Glad to have you.
I've heard your program on the air before, and been looking forward to this Saturday. So, yeah.
Looking forward to hearing from you, too. How did this all happen for you? A nice guy in Evansville, Indiana.
Well, I tell you what, it started when, I don't know why, I guess it was the second semester of high school, and I just wanted to fit in with a bunch of guys, and we got an older guy to go in the liquor store for us, and because we took and pooled our money, and because I had the most money, it was my choice as to what we were going to drink. And, you know, I watched a lot of John Wayne movies, and so we had to have whiskey. And so I got a bottle of cheap whiskey and got it and drank soft drink with it. And, you know, and there for a few minutes, I fit in. And that's the first time I'd fit in a long time. And then naturally, my system wasn't used to alcohol, and it didn't take long before I got sick. And I went home, and, you know, and I caught heck from my father. You know, I left it alone. I just filed it back in my memory bank and proceeded to go ahead and graduate from high school. And then my father gave me an ultimatum. He says, either, you know, you get a job or, you know, I'll pay for you to go to college. And so all of a sudden I had a desire for higher education. And I went to what now is USI. At the time it was, I can't even remember the name. It was a long name, but they're on the west side. And went there for a while, and I got mad at one of the professors, and I quit school and joined the Air Force.
Well, was drinking still going on at that point?
But when I got in college, it was, because I ran into an old classmate from high school, and he was in my same classes. And he shouldn't have been in my same classes because he was a year in front of me. But the previous year, he had gone to Bloomington to IU and had flunked out all of his classes. So his parents made him come back to Evansville to go to school. And so we hit off our friendship because I was only 18, but I could get served at the liquor store. So every time he was going to have a party, I'd go and buy the booze for him. And so then after I bought the booze, then I had to sample the booze. And so alcohol started becoming more and more prevalent in my life. Then, like I said, I got mad at one of the professors and quit and joined the Air Force. And then that's really when I started experimenting more with alcohol. And because it was ready, available, and
accepted. There weren't the drinking laws either then, were there?
Well, when you're on a military base, you know, you can go to the club and get served, and, you know, you go to the NCO club and get that 3-2 beer, or sometimes I go to the officers club and get regular drinks, you know, and so that was that, you know, and I did my 4 years and got out. My father had a job for me waiting, and of course I didn't want the job, but I came home and I started construction work, and that's when it really took off, you know. I was one of the construction workers that comes to people's mind that I would show up and, you know, I may or may not stay all day. You know, I might get to work and decide that I wanted to go to the bar, and I'd leave work. And that's when, you know, work became my hobby, and getting intoxicated was my goal for the every day. You know?
Was it still drinking, mainly alcohol?
It was. By this time, I was, I guess you could say I was a pig.
Did you say pig?
Pig.
I thought that's what you said. Okay.
Because if someone would give me something, I would take it first and then ask what it was.
So it didn't matter.
No. I just wanted to escape reality. So there was alcohol. There was also, you know, I was smoking and illegal substances and just anything to escape reality. I don't know why, but there was just that feeling of emptiness. And so I just trying to keep finding other ways to feel it.
Did anybody talk to you about it at that point or notice it, or was it just so much a part of that culture when you were that age?
No, I remember one time I was at home, and my mother came into my room, and because I used to drink in my room at home, and she said, why do you do that? Says, you know, one's too many and a thousand's not enough. And at that time, it made no sense to me. I says, what are you talking about? You know, I couldn't comprehend what she was talking about. You know, right. I continued to go along my merry way to try and find some sort of peace. And
so you think she saw in you?
She knew that I was changing. She could see the change in me. I couldn't, but she
right.
could, you know. And so for the next, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years, there was constant turmoil, and for me, a struggle, and just, you know, I knew that life needed to be different, but I didn't know how to make it different. And then I ended up, at that time, I had a girlfriend, and she asked me if I would see this lady, you know, I said, you know, okay, because by this time I'd tried everything that I knew. And this lady was big on treatment, and I'd never heard of treatment. And she wanted me to go to Minnesota.
Hazleton.
Yeah. You know, I later found out it was Hazleton, but for a 90-day program. And 90 days scared me to death, you know. And
quite a commitment.
Yeah, and so I couldn't agree to that. And so I postponed it. And eventually, the day before she was going to leave to go back to New Orleans, excuse me, out of sheer desperation, I called her, and she agreed to meet with me. And she still wanted me to go to treatment. But she knew that I was afraid of the 90-day. And she says, well, you can come to New Orleans. We'll teach you the same stuff. We'll just have to, you'll teach it to you quicker. So I agreed to, she said, let me go and check into it. So she went home, And 2 weeks later, she called and said, it's okay, come down here, we'll get you in treatment. And so I just bought a one-way ticket to New Orleans and flew down there. At that time, I was a drug addict. I told anybody walking the street, I'd tell them I was a drug addict. Mm-hmm. And there were two treatment facilities here at the time, but they dealt with alcohol only. If you used any other substance, they wouldn't touch you. And so she was going to get me into a drug rehab. And I went down there, and she met me, and I went and I interviewed with the director. But at the time, I didn't know I was interviewing with him. I was just sitting down talking to him and telling him what was going on. And she asked me to leave the room, and she wanted to talk to him. And then she came out and hugged me and kissed me and told me that I'd been accepted. And I said, oh, okay, well, that's good. And so I unpacked, and then the next morning I got up and I realized that I was on an alcohol recovery ward, and I was upset, to say the least. So for a week or so, I just muddled around and played games with them. And then it wasn't until she had told me that she had promised I'd learn a new way of life if I'd go down there. And I knew that I wasn't going to learn this new way of life unless I started applying myself. And so I started applying myself. And all of a sudden, the concept of a disease that recovery was possible.
It started to hit you.
Yeah. And I got hooked on recovery and Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my saving grace. And, so I was there for the 28 days. I came home, and I had made an agreement with them that I was going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I was going to stay away from my old playmates and my old playpens and all this kind of stuff.
Same language today.
Yeah. And, and so I got home a Friday afternoon, and Friday night I was at a meeting, and I started the journey, and
it's incredible.
It's been pretty wild.
Yeah,
pretty wild.
Definitely. And we will talk more about your recovery and treatment experience right after our break. Tri-State, hold on. We have a break right now. We'll take your calls, and we will be right back with Chuck.
Your Midday News airs Monday through Friday at 12 noon and is sponsored in part by Fathers Matters Coalition, who's asking the question, have you been a father today? For more information, call 422-0626. The Westside Golden Corral, located at 5301 Pearl Drive, featuring their 99-cent kids' meal all day, every day. Limit 2 children per adult. The 10th Annual Family Day in the Park, Saturday, September the 13th. Keep listening to this station for more details.
Today and sleep better tonight at America's Mattress. That's right, cash in on incredible savings on Serta this week at America's Mattress.
America's Mattress is Evansville's only Serta-only sleep shop. That means we specialize in providing the nation's number one selling mattress for less.
Shop today and let our sleep experts demonstrate the superior benefits of Serta Perfect Sleeper mattresses, electric beds, memory foam beds, and more. You'll feel the difference the moment you lie down.
Hurry in for incredible Serta savings this week. This is your best opportunity to get the very best prices on Serta with great financing available.
Plus, at America's Mattress, when you select your mattress today, you really can sleep on it tonight with free same-day delivery, free setup, and free removal of your old bedding.
Don't lose another night's sleep on that old worn-out mattress.
Save today and sleep better tonight on your Serta mattress from America's Mattress.
Get here now for extra savings this week.
At America's Mattress, South Green River Road across from Lawndale.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warrick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning again, Tri-State. We're back with our guest, Chuck, who was probably the first African-American member of AA in this community and has definitely passed his message of hope on to a lot of people. He's telling us his story, and just before break, he was telling us about treatment. And I was asking him during break about treatment for alcoholism, drug addiction. When he came in, it was separated. The alcoholics went to one treatment program and the drug addicts another treatment program. And he had to go all the way to New Orleans for his treatment because they only wanted alcoholics in treatment in this area at that time. But now, thank God, it's not like that. A drug is a drug is a drug. So let's talk to him more about his treatment experience, how he felt about treatment, how he has used his treatment since. So welcome back, Chuck. Thanks for being here again.
Glad to be here.
We were talking about treatment and you going to New Orleans and then coming back and getting so active in AA. How was that for you to come back from treatment, go into AA, which was very white, probably very middle class? How did you make that work for you, and how do you think others can make that work for them?
Well, the thing about it for me, alcoholism is a potentially fatal disease, and that's the way I looked at it. I had to look out for me, and the only way that I could survive was to stay sober. And when I left treatment, I felt so good, and I knew in order to keep it, there were certain things I had to do. And if I had gone to a meeting, they told me that I had to stand on my head, I would have done it.
Yeah.
Because the fear of relapse, it was so great. Today, there are certain people that think relapse is just acceptable. And to me, I've always been fearful of having a relapse because I wasn't sure that I'd make it back.
Did the word disease resonate okay with you when you were 28 years old, just coming back from treatment? Is that a word that shuts people down, or do you think it empowers people to get help?
For me, it was kind of relieving because at one time prior to going to treatment, in my search for recovery, I signed myself into a psychiatric ward, unbeknownst to me.
Because of your drinking and drugging, or you thought you were crazy?
Well, because I just wanted some help, and I thought that this was help. And, I signed myself in, and there were like 25, 28 people there, but there were only two of us there for drugs and alcohol. Everybody else was there for mental evaluations, and that's scary because there was a part of me that knew that I needed to be locked up because of my actions, but then there was a part of me that knew that I could function in society.
And well, you were working full-time, weren't you?
Yeah.
You were a functional, what we call today, a functional alcoholic.
Yeah, I was, you know, working.
Just miserable inside.
Right, you know. And so after I did that week and the doctor released me, the first thing I did was went and get intoxicated because the sense of relief of knowing that I wasn't going to stay locked up. But after in treatment and watching a bunch of films on alcoholism, on alcohol itself as how it's broken down in the body, you know, for me it was so educational and it became empowering to me. And so the disease concept, I never had a problem with. You know, I realized that I had crossed this line and, you know, I could never go back to where I was at, you know, because I was never a social drinker from day one.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
I was always...
let's get it on.
I was double shots and stuff like this because, you know, I wanted to get away from reality as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was either smoking something or drinking something twice the legal limit or, you know, just get me out of here quick.
So, Chuck, when you came back in to sobriety and recovery and all that reality and being an African-American in a white AA community, was that a challenge for you? And do you think it is for African-Americans coming into AA now or any recovery program, not just AA?
Well, for me, it may have been subconscious because I was going to stay sober in spite of some people. You know, I was going to show them that, by God, I can do this, you know. And with the grace of God, I've been able to do that, you know. And not so much as any one individual or group. It's just that, you know, with the help of a power greater than myself, it's been made possible. But there, you know, everybody has their own crosses to bear. So, you know, and for me, I didn't want to use it as an excuse. And it's kind of funny because now I'm the poster child for recovery with the family. You know, if anybody in the family gets into trouble, you know, it's like talk to Uncle Junior, you know, and then, you know, when they're telling them, oh, I can't do this, they're, yeah, Uncle Junior did, so you can too, you know. And so it really it's kind of it's a blessing and a curse to some of the members of the family because I eliminate some of their excuses. Yeah, you know. And
so you think if you want to be in recovery, no matter what you are, black, whatever minority or whoever you are, young woman, you have to come in with this mindset that you are willing to do this no matter what. Is that that you have to put your sobriety first?
For me, that's number one.
Even over people's prejudices.
The prejudices don't stand up to the life-threatening situation that you're in.
That's an incredible, great attitude.
Well, you know, that's the bottom line. I mean, I have to look out for me, and then I'll look out for my family and everything else. But if I'm intoxicated, the rest of the world is going to shatter around me. And so I have to take responsibility for my actions, and then I can go forward.
And that's a great attitude. And I know you're that way in the way you role model. There's just no excuses for somebody to not get recovery. Do you believe it's possible for anybody, no matter who, what, where, what your economic situation is, what your color is, what your gender? Do you think recovery and sobriety is available to everybody? And how can we invite them to it?
Yes, and the reason I say that is Today there are morning meetings, noon meetings, 5:30 meetings,
midnight meetings,
8 o'clock meetings. Anyone can go to. You don't have to go through treatment if you are dead set on recovery and following the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. You can stay sober.
Are you talking about coming into Alcoholics Anonymous or any of the 12-step meetings?
Any 12-step program. The bottom line is the addiction can drive you here, but then the sobriety can keep you here. Because the recovery is here, and it doesn't cost anything. At the meetings, they pass the basket. It's purely voluntarily. If you don't have it, no one's going to point a finger to you and say, "Hey, you didn't put nothing in the basket."
In fact, most people just put a dollar in. That's the tradition.
Yeah, and if you've got it, fine. If you don't, fine. It doesn't make any difference.
That's right.
And you can go there, and then you can also meet other people that are trying to do what you're doing. I basically grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there were a group of us. There were some divorcees, some single people, and so when the holidays came, we got together, we did stuff, we had cookouts.
Made it fun.
Yeah.
You were involved in the very first Young People's Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1981.
We were going to enjoy our sobriety. You know, if we couldn't have fun, then that would be in the same world that we had just left.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true.
And I'm going to have fun in life. You know?
So how can people find Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yeah, it's all you have to do is look in the phone book. Another thing is I'm sure that all law enforcement officers will tell you.
And hospitals.
And hospitals. It's not a secret. When I came here, there weren't as many meetings. It wasn't as...
Wasn't as chic.
Yeah, well,
wasn't as available.
It wasn't as known
right.
to the community. But today, this morning, I was watching TV, and there's a commercial with the chief of police, and he's talking about if you've got drugs that... there's help available. You can call us, and it's kind of neat because, you can visit them or we're going to visit you.
Yeah,
that's great.
I saw that, too.
And in this day and age, you can't ignore. If you've got a problem, you can't ignore it. It's not going to get any better by ignoring it.
And anybody can get better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that law. That's Brad Hill,
yeah.
The police department. I thought that's great. And me working for the Judicial Center, who would have thought that? But I know my judge and most of the people on the drug court team are very much advocates of sobriety and staying out of the policeman's radar screens. So any last words of wisdom before we close the show, Chuck? I definitely want to invite you back.
And I'll gladly come. The most important thing is, if you think that you have a problem, you probably do.
Good point.
And there's help available. I'm talking about a fatal disease, and ignoring a disease is not going to treat it. The only way for help is to get treated. Whether it's going to a treatment or whether it's, going to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, whether, contact your church, the help is available. So
thank you.
That's the main thing.
It is. And thank you for coming today. Thank you for bringing hope into my life and my recovery. We're going to sign off. We'll have Chuck back. I'm curious to see what it was like for a drug addict to come back into an AA community that didn't want to hear about drug addicts at that point. But that was back in the 80s. It's not like that anymore, thank God. And as Chuck said, get to a place where you can get some help. Confront this fatal disease. This is Lisa signing off from Radio Rehab for this week. We'll see you next week. And don't forget to do the next right thing.